Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina. And as always, I am joined by my buddy, Scott Chu. Scott, it's been a while. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm actually fully in the fantasy baseball mindset now. I actually just finished the original set of the ranks that we'll be doing for the Pitcherless 6.0 release, which is in February, week before the Super Bowl. Usually it's after, but you know, because of, you know, the way the NFL schedule kind of worked out, we're doing it. It's right in the beginning of February, so keep an eye out for that. I've got top 30 for each position. It'll be a little different than what, you know, we're going to be talking about ADPs and stuff, but the ranks I do are for five starts at each position, which matches Yahoo. So you might notice that some of them, you're like, oh, that guy's not shortstop eligible in my league. And it's like, yeah, I know, because
Yahoo's very
ESPN
liberal.
And NFBC, they use 20 games. Yahoo is just a huge outlier. I mean, one of the biggest ones you'll find in that format is Mookie Betts.
Yahoo, basically, if you look at a position, you know, if you passed it like on the base paths, you're eligible. So
Anthony Rizzo used to get second base eligibility because of the shift. When he was with the Cubs, he would shift into second base and it would count as an appearance for like one at bat.
Amazing. Yeah. So how'd the holidays treat you? How's everything going?
Not too bad. I'm up here in the north, just like you are. We had that big blizzard roll through right around Christmas. So did me a favor. It split up all the Christmases so I didn't have one weekend of driving myself all over the state here in Michigan trying to, you know, and then just ending up with these baskets of presents for my son and for us and just all this clutter that takes forever to get rid of. We were able to split it up. Went nice, you know, we're able to stay safe during the blizzard, didn't lose power or anything, so can't complain.
That's great. Yeah, the blizzard passed us by. You know, New York City, we were, we had frigid temperatures, like Christmas morning was like 7 degrees, but we didn't get any snow. So you had a white Christmas, huh?
Yeah, we got, a little less than a foot. I mean, there was talk of there being even more snow than what we got. The worst part was just the ice. Because of those frigid temperatures, it was just so icy. It was awful.
Yeah. All right. Well, glad that you're safe. Glad that you had a good holiday. And like I said, it's been a while. I think the last episode we did, we focused on a lot of the hot stove moves. And I'm not going to go through everything that went on since our last get-together there, Scott. But any of the moves stick out at you? Like, you know, Sean Murphy to the Braves, you know, these moves that have taken place since we last met, you know, Carlos Rodon to the Yanks, Syndergaard, fifth starter for the Dodgers. You got Chris Bassett, 3-year deal with the Blue Jays, Sean Manaea, 2-year deal with the Giants. Any of these stick out at you or just basically, you know, not going to really affect the fantasy landscape too much?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Rodon, it's nicer to pitch in San Francisco than it is in New York, right? I mean, that's... But that's not enough for me to say, like, oh, he's moving way down in rankings, right? Like, someone might shuffle him in a tier somewhere. You know, they might move him down a spot or two, you know, with home ballpark being a tiebreaker. But it's not as though the AL East is as formidable as it once was. You know, the Red Sox just don't look very good. And maybe if Trevor Story comes back, you know, they'll be a little bit, it'll be a little bit scarier. But, you know, that, you know, Sean Murphy, he's actually a little better off because hitting in Oakland is hard. That huge, it's a big ballpark and it's got a huge foul territory. So it really punishes guys who hit a lot of fly balls because the outfielders and the corner infielders are able to get to them. So with him, that's a little nicer and he'll be, you know, obviously in a much better lineup. I think it just solidifies Sean Murphy as a guy who is really, you know, sort of at the end of this, should be drafted in 12-team one catcher leagues sort of area, right? I rank him 10th in the rankings that'll be coming out in the same tier as like Wilson Contreras, MJ Melendez, and William Contreras. That's actually the whole tier. And it's, you know, and it's right behind like Perez and Rutschman and Kirk. There's a bit of a gap there between like that tier and the tier that Sean Murphy's in, and Sean Murphy's at the bottom because, you know, his batting average is limited, but it's nice to see him in a, you know, sort of in a ballpark that will be a little bit better to hit in, and more importantly, a lineup that will be a lot better to hit in.
Right, right. Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, we didn't talk about Lewin Diaz. I think he got moved like six times before, since we last talked. So we don't have that. That's a whole episode if we need to do that.
There we go. There we go. We'll keep that in the bank. Keep that in our library, future library. Yeah, you talk about Sean Murphy, you know, getting a little bit of a boost, getting away from that Oakland Mausoleum where the A's play their home games. 45-point better batting average on the road for his career. And OPS is almost 140 points better on the road as well. So you kind of alluded that, you know, you're fully into, you know, fantasy baseball right now. And I'm sure that we're getting a lot more individuals tuning in to these kinds of podcasts now because as we're recording this, it's January 7th, 1 p.m. Eastern time. It's the final regular season of football, so fantasy football coming to an end. I guess some leagues play that last the 18th week. Most don't, but now's the time really to focus on fantasy baseball at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, fantasy football is coming to an end. I actually do have one league that plays the final week, and it's because we do a 2-week championship.
Okay.
Right. So the championship is over the course of both weeks, which is kind of fun and interesting. You know, whatever. It's just a group of guys that I used to work with. So it's kind of fun. Obviously, you know, there's big NFL news. We don't need to spend a lot of time with it, but, you know, glad to hear that DeMar Hamlin is feeling better.
Absolutely.
Back to consciousness. And actually, you know, young baseball players that are in like little league, they'll wear chest protectors because sometimes those line drives can hit someone right in the chest. So
absolutely.
Luckily we don't see too much of that in the major leagues, but yeah, I mean, This is fantasy baseball time. It's really starting to ramp up. We'll see it even more in February when pitchers and catchers report. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is the time to really start getting ahead. It's not like we're going to get a lot of new information before spring training. You know, the information you get now and the information you can get 3 weeks from now, pretty much the same, unless someone, you know, there'll be a couple of random injuries reported, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's dive right in. I mean, we had the last position that we had done a deep dive into was second base. And now we go to one of the deepest positions in fantasy baseball, shortstop, and you have your rankings, and you know I'll refer also to the NFBC ADP rankings as well. We'll just start with Trey Turner. Really, not much to say about him that hasn't already been said. In a lot of leagues, he's the number one overall pick, 5-tool production, playing with the Phillies. Wanted to go with the Phillies, signed there as a free agent. So, I mean, I don't really see a change in his fantasy value at this stage. I think he's just going to be what he always has been, young enough to continue to steal bases and continue to produce, you know, high batting average and home runs.
Yeah, I mean, there's always some question about stolen bases when a player goes to a new team, just because stolen bases are very, you know, your manager is one of the biggest influences on your stolen base potential, right? If there's managers that don't run, right? Jim Leland was a guy with Detroit that just never sent guys, like ever. He could have had guys that could have stole. I mean, he had Rajai Davis for a while, and he didn't send him nearly as often as you think, because that just wasn't his philosophy. He should be fine in Philly. They've had plenty of guys that can steal some bases. They let JT Realmuto run, right? If you're gonna let your catcher run, you're probably gonna let your shortstop run,
right?
So, you know, and the top of that, Philly's lineup is as good as ever. I mean, some folks might start getting a little worried because Trey Turner is starting to cross that, you know, that magical 30-year-old bridge, right? Which I did several years ago. And I'll admit, I'm not as fast as I was, but I'm not too worried about Trey Turner. You know, he's being picked at the top, not because I think very few people will project him to be the number one fantasy player. But the reason you take him first overall is because almost everyone projects him to finish within the top 5 to 7. Right. He's an incredibly safe pick at the top. Him and Jose Ramirez, who we'll talk about on the next position breakdown, are there not because we think they're the best. It's because they're so likely to finish in that top 1, 2, or 3 at their position. You know, there's like that's their 90, you know, even their like 50% outcome, which, you know, a season that's not as good as you hope, they're still going to finish up there because he's just that dependable. His range of outcomes is pretty tight. So the only reason I would avoid it is those of you who are in head-to-head category leagues, particularly more shallow ones, stolen bases matter less. In the NFBC, stolen bases matter a ton, especially if you're going after that overall. But in a head-to-head categories league, and we'll talk about this more with other players, the stolen bases don't matter as much, right? There are a lot of good strategies to punting stolen bases. in these head-to-head category leagues. That might move him down your board a little bit, but sure as heck not out of the top half of the first round, right? Mm-hmm. If you're picking fifth and Trey Turner falls to you, you take
him. Oh, my God. Right? Yeah, it's a gift.
Even if you're like, oh, I was going to punt stolen bases, you should never be thinking about punting a category in the first round.
Yeah.
Right? That's not the way to do that. You end up deciding to punt because those players didn't come to you early in the draft.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we're going to continue doing the shortstop preview, but you mentioned stolen bases, of course, and you have to when you talk Trey Turner. And we'll talk about this specifically, you know, going forward in other episodes as well. But let me stop right here, just get a quick assessment. With the new rule changes, I'm seeing some analysts saying that, wow, there's going to be a huge uptick in stolen bases because of, you know, the change in rules where the pitcher is limited in how many pickoff throws he can make to first base, and you know the size of the base has been enlarged a couple inches or whatnot. Do you think we're going to see a huge uptick in stolen bases at this stage, or is it kind of like a wait and see kind of thing? Or as well, like you mentioned before, a team strategy, you know, a manager's, you know, underlying strategy that will be more influential.
Yeah. I think the way this is going to work is that certain pitchers are going to get picked on a lot. You remember John Lester, and he got the yips for like four years.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing that I think they're really going to start taking advantage of, specific pitcher catcher combinations, right? The Mets used to be so bad at it, right? Because like Noah Syndergaard takes forever to throw a pitch, right? Mm-hmm. Now the pitch clock has made that go a little faster. You can't take quite as much time, but it's going to be very specific. I think it's going to be great for when you're streaming, because we're going to find specific batteries that these teams are going to run after, right? They're going to say, you're going to get on first and you're going to look to run, right? But overall, you know, maybe a couple guys like a Trey Turner gets a slightly better sort of success rate on stolen bases because the bag's a little bigger and they can't try to keep him on first base quite as aggressively. But it's really just going to be situational, right? I mean, I hate to use that as my everything's going to be situational, but this specifically, right? Same with the shift. Certain players or certain situations, it's really going to be obvious. And a lot of the other stuff, it's just going to be nothing. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, with Trey Turner, it's not that I think he'll overall get more, but I do think he'll get more against maybe certain teams, certain pitchers, certain catchers. They're going to pick on him more. And it'll be easier to find stolen bases that way, because you're like, oh, if a guy is playing against this battery, there's a decent chance he can run.
Yeah. That's a great point, that from an offensive standpoint, that, you know, you could plan and strategize more as, you know, you're on bases to which pitchers to target. So that's great analysis on your part. Let's finish this top tier. The second shortstop coming off the board at NFBC is Bobby Witt, also eligible shortstop, third base. You know, stole 30 bases last season, 20 home runs, .254 batting average. Has to work on his plate discipline. Only walked 4.7% of the time, which contributed to a pretty low .294 OBP. Was much better in the minor leagues, where it was like in the mid 300 range. O-swing also of 37.3. O-swing is when you swing at pitches outside of the strike zone. League average was 32.6. And I'll just go through the next couple in this tier, and then you could, you know, comment. Bo Bichette, we've spoken about before, where he got red hot at the end of the season. Got caught stolen base. He attempted to steal 21 bases, got caught 8 times. So keep that in mind. I don't know if he's going to be getting the green light too often, but obviously very, very talented young shortstop for the Blue Jays. And then finishing up this tier, we got Fernando Tatis. You know, actually this weekend, Scott, he's eligible to start baseball activity again. Of course, going to miss the first 21 games of the season due to the end of his PED suspension. Had multiple surgeries, 2 surgeries on his wrist. Had the labrum surgery for his troubled shoulder. And for me, devil's advocate here, you know, how much of the power comes back right away after having 2 surgeries on your wrists? But I'll let you talk about those players in your first tier.
Yeah, so let's start with Bobby Witt. I'll tell you that, you know, with my you know, my personal rankings, I had to go Turner, Bichette, Tatis, then Bobby Witt. Just because, again, I'm focusing on a bit of a different sort of format than the NFBC, right? Mm-hmm. So Bobby Witt's up there because not only is he eligible at third base, which is a big deal, but also he steals a bunch of bases. But I'm glad you mentioned his plate discipline, because if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I just posted one of my favorite things, and that's a rolling chart. And Bobby Witt Jr.'s rolling strikeout rate chart is exactly what you want to see from a rookie, right? It drops down. I mean, it just keeps coming down and down and down and down and down. He ends the season with a 21.4% strikeout rate, but he actually spent the last about 60, maybe 70 games of the season well below that, between 15 and 20%, right? I mean, almost the entire second half of the season, he is nice and in that 15 to 20% strikeout rate range, which makes it a lot more palatable if he's only walking once in a while, right? I mean, that's really, really, really what I wanted to see. It gives him more opportunities to make contact, get on base. With his kind of speed, he just needs to put the bat on the ball and start running, right? I mean, he can definitely get there. When you talk about Bo Bichette, I mean, he had such a weird season. The final line looked great, but you have to remember that this all came at the end of the season. He was incredibly average or worse for the whole first half. It was really bizarre. I have no idea what happened.
He made me suffer in that first half, I'll tell you for certain.
Yeah, I traded him in a dynasty league. I'm kicking myself now, but man, he was so average for so long. The quality of contact wasn't good. It wasn't like he was unlucky. He was not good for a long time. So something to keep in the back of your mind, but it's not, I mean, what he showed was that Bo Bichette has the talent to create a full season stat line in 2 months, right? I mean, that's really what I sort of took away from all that, was that the talent's there and that's all it takes, you know, in head to head in categories that killed you, because you can't go back and get those wins back right from the first half of the season. But in Roto, it totally makes up for itself. Right. I mean, you put him back in and boom, it's all there. Right. And it's not like you ever benched the guy, right? Especially in like an NFBC league where it's so deep, you don't have a shortstop any given week that's better than even average Bo Bichette, right? You just didn't have one. You waited for him. So it really worked out. Again, head to head, it was a little worse, but Bo Bichette, no real worries there. That's still a strong lineup. That's still, you know, a player that you should be targeting. There's no reason to worry about it. I ranked him second because I believe in him that much. But speaking of talent to make things happen in a single half, you know, in a short time, let's talk about Fernando Tatis Jr., right? So injured, obviously, but you know, that suspension almost is a bit of a blessing because he gets to go and get healthy, right? Because he was going to play through every injury he got. He was going to play through the shoulder.
He wasn't even going to tell the Padres about his wrist, right? He's like, they're asking him about it. And, you know, yeah, I had this little motorcycle accident.
Yeah, no big deal. Let's remember that big, you know, I don't want to call it a breakout season because he's always been good when he's been in the majors. But that big season he had in 2021 with 42 home runs, 99 runs scored, 97 RBI, 20 stolen bases, that was in 130 games, right? In theory, he could actually play more than that this season, right? He won't, right? He's not going to play, you know, 130 games means he plays just about every single day. And it's hard for a player with that injury history to sort of do that. But let's look at that Steamer projection. They're projecting 118 games, right? So they project him to miss probably about another 25 games on top of his suspension, right? They still have him for 35 home runs, 87 runs scored, 89 RBI, and 19 stolen bases with a .283 batting average, right? Like, that's amazing. That's a full season player. Like, what player are you mad that was their line, right? And if he's hurt, you know, you get to have a replacement player in there picking up some stats. Now, again, he won't be on the IL. If your league has an NA spot, I'm moving Tatis actually up my ranks because then I can put him in that NA slot for some leagues because he's still serving a suspension and you get that roster spot back. But a lot of leagues, especially like NFBC, you don't. That's a dead roster spot. You don't have him for a whole month. And as you know, when I was talking to the, you know, about my hitter rankings to Nick Pollock as like a two-person roundtable, he pointed out that's a six of the season, right? I mean, that's a big deal. So that's something to keep in mind, but the upside is just so massive. It is. It's very plausible that he plays 125 games and is a top five player in fantasy this year. There are very few players with that kind of upside. That's why I think you just have to go after him. If you know, especially if you feel good about being able to fill that shortstop position while he's out. Yeah. Right. So that's the one. I think you have to have a decision on Fernando Tatis when you go into your drafts. You've got to know this is when I'm comfortable taking him. You should always be willing to take him. You just got to know how early you're willing to do that.
Right. And have a capable backup, you know, if you're using him at the shortstop position, because I didn't even mention that he's shortstop outfield eligible. And the guy that we'll talk about a little bit later in Xander Bogaerts will probably play most of the time at shortstop, you would think. But the fact that he's also outfield eligible makes him even more valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're probably going to have, I mean, filling, especially in like a three outfield league, filling that last outfield spot's pretty easy, but it is nice because shortstop is so deep. And it's very possible that you'll wind up with two very, very good shortstops in the first four rounds of your draft. Yeah. Right.
And five outfielder leagues, we're seeing that, you know, talent dries up pretty quickly too. So, you know, having him as eligible at outfielder helps all that much more.
Yeah. I mean, if you're there and all of a sudden you've wound up with Fernando Tatis Jr. and you've, you know, landed maybe a Corey Seager, right? I mean, that's a very plausible thing to happen in drafts because shortstop is so deep at the top, right? It's just really, really thick up there. And then it sort of just drops off the face of the earth, right? It happens around like shortstop number 20 or so in like a Yahoo style league. You start going from like Xander Bogaerts and Carlos Correa. And then there's like Jeremy Pena and Gleyber Torres and Ahmed Rosario, all of a sudden feeling much less secure. And then you're coming way down where you're like, man, I hope Nico Horner breaks out. I wonder what Tyro Estrada can do, right? Those guys just don't have a chance at being top tier players, right? What's really weird about shortstop is the top half. There's a bunch of guys you're like, man, these guys could really be top five, top six shortstops, right? But then there's like this hard line where it's like, no, like that possibility goes out the window. I'm a big Jeremy Pena fan and think that he's a really nice target because he's a very good shortstop that you can get late. But Jeremy Pena will not be a top seven shortstop, right? Because he's not going to beat out Lindor and Seager and Semien. He's got a chance to be in the mix in like that sort of, 10 to 15 kind of tier, like with Dansby Swanson and Andrés Giménez, and he can sort of get in there with those guys because I think he's got a good hit tool. We'll talk about it more later, but you just run out of upside, right? The upside you need to be at top of shortstop right now is massive because the best fantasy players are there at that position. They're at shortstop and outfield. So it's tough there, but again, just because of all that depth, there is a way to take Tatis Jr. and not hurt. Right. Especially at shortstop.
Yep. Well, let's take a quick break here because we got through your first tier, top four at the shortstop position. We'll be right back and pick up our breakdown of the shortstop position right after this. All right. We're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I'm Joe Galina. This guy is Scott Chu. We're breaking down the shortstop position, and we got through the first four, and we're kind of talking NFBC ADP as well as Scott's rankings, which will appear on the Pitcher List website in February, right? You said right around the time that the
Super Bowl? I think it's February 7th. I hate to say don't quote me on that because I should know this stuff, but it's the launch day for Pitcher List 6.0.
Right. Okay. So let's take a look at the next few shortstops according to NFBC, and as well, your rankings, Francisco Lindor, fifth shortstop coming off the board in NFBC ADP leagues, ADP of 35 overall, had a big bounce back season in 2022, especially when it comes to runs scored and RBI production, batted 270 for the season, 26 home runs were his most since the 2019 season, had 107 RBI and 98 runs scored. Only negative that I could see, the 270 batting average, you had an expected batting average of 254, but we could discuss that. Then from there, you mentioned Marcus Semien because of the position eligibility. NFBC has him as second base only, but we could talk a little Marcus Semien in a moment. But the guy I'm kind of, you mentioned him earlier before, Corey Seager, he kind of creates a new tier when it comes to NFBC ADP. He's at number 73 overall, actually down to 68. So when I first started taking notes on the shortstop position, he's picked up like five spots, but had a really good season, 33 home runs, 91 runs scored, batted second for most of the season. That might explain why he only had 83 RBI. But his 245 batting average, well below his career norm, but he had a 283 expected batting average. And Scott, he's one of the guys that they think is going to benefit a lot from the lack of the shift. So I was looking at an article by Sports Info Solutions. They wrote it back in September, mid-September, September 12th, actually. And at that point, they said that he had 25 hits lost due to the shift. That was the most in baseball last season. So, you know, I mean, based on his ADP and his pedigree and the fact that maybe he might see a little help with the lack of the shift, I'm kind of liking Corey Seager this season.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things going on here. Let's talk about the shift first. I think that's the sort of the hottest topic. He does lose 25 hits to the shift. I do think teams are going to find ways to pseudo shift. So I don't want to say it's entirely going away, but his batted ball profile explains that huge gap between his batting average and his expected batting average. You know, the original X stats that you get from StatCast don't really account for batted ball direction. If you go to pitcher list and look at his player page there, they do. So we do a little better job of grabbing that, and his expected batting average was a little better, but he's got that classic archetype of why he was being shifted. He's a lefty who hits a fair number of ground balls. And when he hits ground balls, you know what he does with them? He pulls them, right? He doesn't spray them. He pulls them. So when he hits ground balls, it goes right where you think it's going to go. So there's a lot of upside there. Now, one, you know, love seeing the big power, you know, the big, big power come back, right? 33 home runs. He hadn't hit that many since his first full season back in 2016 for Corey Seager. So that was a big deal. This guy's only 28 years old. He'll turn 29 during the season. His, you know, obviously his plate discipline, the plate discipline for Seager is fantastic, right? He's you know, he actually gets a big boost in points leagues because of how much contact he makes. Texas has done a good job in terms of like building, they're sort of building a roster, believe it or not, most of it through free agency, which is a really hard thing to do. It's an expensive thing to do, but I'm glad they're doing it because I hope that billionaires spend money, generally speaking. So, you know, I love that he was healthy. Love that he hit the home runs. I think the batting average is going to come up, right? I actually sort of like Steamer's projection here of 270 for Corey Seager. I think that makes sense. 245 is going to be an outlier. It is an outlier if you just look at his career.
Yes.
Right? I mean, he just doesn't hit like that. So, you know, shifting is not all that new. What is sort of new for him is how often he pulls. He pulls a little bit more as of late, but you know, he's getting, you know, I don't want to say he's getting better about it. He just had his highest pull rate for a single season, but this change in the shift, you know, hopefully that gives him a couple hits back, even if it's not 25, maybe it's 12, right? 12 hits is still a lot of hits,
sure,
right? Like that matters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting a decent number of hits back will be a big deal, and just regular natural regression to the mean, right? This guy is a 270 to 280 hitter or better. Right. That's the talent he has with the bat. He's got a great hit tool. I think he's going to get a whole lot closer to that. And he's absolutely a value. If he falls in your drafts at all, right? Like looking at some of these max picks, like 82, holy cow. Right. Like even at that ADP at 67, like there's no format where I don't want him. Right. Sure. Mm-hmm. He doesn't steal bases, but I don't care. He didn't need to steal bases because he can hit home runs. Right. He can hit for average, even though he didn't last season. I think he will. And he showed us that healthy season again. That's exactly what I wanted to see. You can now see that he's played most of a season. He did that in 2019, 2020, and 2022. So now that durability issue is becoming a little less of a concern. He had it in 2021, but he's looking a whole, you know, he looked fully healthy last season. I think you can expect that 140 to 150 games this season, which is as many as you can really hope for any player. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that's just, it's hard to project for more than that because guys get hurt. It's just a thing that happens. So Corey Seager, definitely someone I'd be targeting, but you may sometimes find that he goes a little earlier in drafts because everybody's targeting him. Everybody wants him. And I think some people are going to overplay how much the shift will give him back in batting average when in reality, he'll get a bunch of that batting average back just by being Corey Seager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned the pitcherless player pages, man. You really, if you're doing, starting to do your analysis, really need to visit pitcherless.com. Those player pages really out of sight. So keep that in mind. And not just because, you know, I'm doing a podcast for Pitcherless, but really impressive how the website has really improved in a short period of time.
Yeah. And actually, I really want to, I'm glad you mentioned it again. I really want to talk about it because his, if you go to StatCast, they say he had an X average of 245. You know what it was for us at Pitcherless? Because we get the StatCast data. We're the only site that gets that StatCast data and can manipulate it, right? Mm-hmm. So we use everything we get for them. We've got Kyle Bland and a couple other folks really sort of tweaking these to make it better. We've got a lot of cool stats coming out, but our expected batting average for last year, 285.
Wow.
Because okay. We accounted for the directionality, right? That means that's even more evidence that it should be up, right? Mm-hmm. It's even more evidence that he should be right there. So mm-hmm. really use out, if you use Pitcherless expected stats, you're just going to find a much better judge of a guy's true talent than the regular ones. Cause we have taken the expected batting average you get on StatCast and built on it. We've got, mm-hmm. we've got more than what they have. We've found more things that correlate. Right. It's really, really cool. You'll hear a lot more about it as we get closer to Pitcherless 6.0, but use those. Those are your edge. What, like, you know, everybody knows to like look up a StatCast thing, right? But when you have information that others don't have, it's one of the few edges you can still get sure. in this game with data. And Pitcherless, I'm telling you, I'm a company man, I'm a shill, whatever. Our stuff is really, really good. I've seen some of like the stuff that goes into it. I'm not a math wizard, but I do understand hitting a little bit. And like they do a really, really good job of knowing what else goes into a hit, adding those things that StatCast doesn't add in right now. Ball directionality is a big one. And sure. I'm so glad that we are factoring that in because that's a huge deal, with or without the shift. It's a huge deal knowing where those balls are getting hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that really wraps up your second tier. But just continuing on, we've got, according to NFBC, seventh shortstop coming off the board is Tommy Edman, Cardinals second baseman shortstop. I think we spoke about him at length when we did our second base recap. 2022 is his second straight season of 30 or more stolen bases, and he should be a major contributor to that category as long as the Cardinals keep batting him in the leadoff spot. And then O'Neill Cruz is the eighth shortstop coming off the board. We've spoken about him at length as well in an earlier episode after the season was over. Obviously hits the ball extremely hard, 100th percentile in max exit velocity per Baseball Savant. He has some interesting splits, batted 158 against left-handed pitching, 265 against righties. 269 batting average at home, 194 away, but finished off the season strong. In his last 28 games, batted 298 with a 370 OBP and a 544 slug, and we saw a big drop in his K rate too as the season progressed. Ninth shortstop, Dansby Swanson, newly signed to the Cubs, only played 16 career games at Wrigley, but batted 307, 403, 452. Triple slash, and of course, I guess you have to take into account not just the ballpark, but who he was facing there as well. Five-tool guy entering his prime years. Expected batting average, he was batting 277. Expected batting average was 20 points below his actual. So I don't know if you want to just take a quick stab at a couple of these guys, and then we could just move on. But this next tier of yours is huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll briefly mention that this tier is enormous because mm-hmm. there's a lot of guys who could be at the top of it, mm-hmm. right? One of the reasons I say this position is so deep is because there's this big pool of players who all have this chance to be a top 10 shortstop, right? There's not a lot of positions where you can say the guy going 17th or, you know, the guy ranked 17th has a very, you know, for me, that's Gunnar Henderson. We'll talk about him later, but like he's got a real shot at being a top 10 shortstop, right? Because he's got that kind of talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very interesting thing that we're seeing at shortstop right now. Just a lot of good players there. So O'Neill Cruz, I mean, he's the one that people are going to want to talk about. I mean, briefly on Tommy Edman, you know what he is, right? He's multi-position yep. eligible. He steals bases. He doesn't do a whole lot else. At this point in the draft, you either need stolen bases or you don't. So Tommy Edman is either on your board or he isn't, right? I mean, that's just something to know about Tommy Edman. He's a guy that moves up and down your board because his main value comes from those stolen bases, right? Yes. Barely double-digit power, whatever. But O'Neill Cruz. So a couple things. Number one, the strikeout rate is real, right? This guy's a 6'7" shortstop, right? It's a big strike zone. It takes him a long time to get the bat through it, right? He's going to strike out. Now, there's a reason, though, that places like Steamer are projecting this sub 30% strikeout rate, even though that is not what we saw. And I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, the rolling charts show that it's way, way better. It did right at the end of the season. We saw this period of time, about 50 at-bats or 40 at-bats or so of even walks to strikeouts, right? That's a big deal, right? Even if it's only for 40 at-bats, because, you know, people like to talk about stabilization points. We don't talk about it as much right now, but for strikeout rate, it's actually some, it's not predictive, but it's very descriptive at about 50, right? So to see 40 of really good plate discipline is impressive. And the fact is with O'Neill Cruz, he can run faster, throw harder, hit harder than anybody else in baseball. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, that's just what he's able to do. There's very few players with this kind of elite talent. I think that's going to make him either, he's either going to go too early in your drafts or he's going to fall to you, right? It's one of these two, because either a bunch of people are going to be off because of the strikeout rate. I will say, again, I've talked about him a few times, Kyle Bland. He's got a Twitter. He calls it Blandalytics. He's got some really, really cool stuff. And we've got some rolling charts on swing decisions, right? Based on who swung at what pitches, and they're it's individual events. It's not just, did he swing at stuff outside the strike zone? It's, did he swing at good pitches or not? Right. And again, you won't be surprised to hear that O'Neill Cruz swung at a lot of pitches he really shouldn't have. Right. But late in the season, we see those swing decisions getting better and better and better. And he struck out a lot. He knows he struck out a lot. What do you think he's working on right now? What do you think he did? What did the Pirates are not a smart organization. They, insulted Brian Reynolds with the contract offer they gave him, acting like they're buying years of arbitration or something. It was ridiculous. But one thing, anybody would understand that, hey, O'Neill Cruz, let's talk about striking out less next year. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that's base level. A little league coach would figure that out. Right. So that's what he's working on. I think he will make better swing decisions. There's a lot of cool ways that teams can work on that. I know some teams have like virtual reality goggles that they actually do for like pitch recognition, where they show like a ball coming out and spin and try to help the player recognize the pitch earlier and earlier. There's things he can do. I think he will get to them. He's still going to strike out a lot. It's going to be more than 25%. But if it's under 30%, if you told me right now that you went to the future and O'Neill Cruz struck out less than 30% of the time and he played 130 games, I would be drafting him at his ADP. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because he's that kind of talent. I mean, we're talking 20-20 stolen bases, maybe 25-25, right? This guy is just supremely athletic, supremely talented. He can do a lot of things, right? We're waiting on the hit tool. I hate waiting on hit tools, because when the hit tool's off, there's no stats to come when you swing and miss, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get any positive stats for that. But I think that the talent is just so high that you have to be ready for it. Finally, Dansby Swanson had a career year. You've already got an idea of how you feel about Dansby Swanson, probably. I ranked him fairly well. In my ranks, he's inside the top 10. But if you told me you ranked him 15th, I would not argue with you, right? Because I think that little pack is densely populated. And I do think he's going to get a chance to get a lot of at-bats with the Cubs. He's going to bat right in the top of that lineup. And that's one thing that's held him back. When he was with Atlanta, Dansby Swanson would routinely get pushed down to 6th, 7th in the batting order because they had Acuna and Albies. And, they even batted Travis d'Arnaud ahead of him, right? So last season, one of the reasons he breaks out is because he got locked into that number 2 spot in the lineup. He's going to get that in Chicago. They've got a couple pieces at the top of that lineup, I think, that can be useful. I think he can get some stats there. I think he's going to play every day. So there's a very good, safe shortstop there, even if he's not someone that's going to excite you, despite finishing in the top 5 at shortstop last season. It's weird to be down on him, but some people don't pay for breakouts. You're kind of not paying for a breakout. I think his ADP is very reasonable. NFBC, it's 80.96, right? So it's not like you have to take him as a top 5 shortstop. So I think this is a decent place for him. And he's a very safe option, especially if you missed out on the top.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's take another quick break and continue breaking down the shortstops in this tier. And we're going to talk about Xander Bogaerts, who was the 10th shortstop to come off the board in NFBC ADP drafts so far this season. And we'll talk about Bogaerts right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. Joe Gallina, you could follow me at Joe Gallina on Twitter, and you could follow my co-host, Scott Chu, at If the Chu Fits. And we're in the middle of Scott's third tier, and we're also breaking down, you know, comparing it to NFBC ADP drafts. Xander Bogaerts, 10th shortstop coming off the board. Of course, signed a long-term contract with the Padres. Not a great hitting environment for right-handed batters in San Diego's Petco Park. Batting average was fine last season, but he did suffer a power outage last season. Bogaerts hit just 15 home runs, pulled the ball less this past season, possibly the result of him having to adjust his swing after he suffered an injury. He had a collision with outfielder Alex Verdugo on May 20th and seemed never to really get that power bat going again. Overall, he pulled the ball just under 40% of the time, which is down from 45.6% in 2021. And the last time that he pulled the ball that low of a percentage was 2015, and that affected his home run production as well. That season had only 7 home runs. 11th shortstop, according to NFBC drafts. Tim Anderson, not a sexy name, but provides consistent and very good production. Still only 30 years old. Had finger surgery, which ended his season in early August. Had also had a groin strain where he missed time in June. So he played just 79 games. But it seems that the power that we used to see from him hasn't been there. Used to think of him as a 15 to 20 homer guy. But, you know, he already has a high career ground ball rate of 52%, but the launch angle has also gone down. So I think the home runs, we might not see getting back to that that early career level that we have. But if you're looking for a guy for batting average and even for stolen bases, I mean, the guy hasn't batted below 301 since the 2019 season. And another guy I'll just bring up, the 12th shortstop coming off the board in NFBC ADP rankings here. Wander Franco for the Rays. Trying to figure out who he is, what he's going to end up as, what type of production. He's going to be 22 years old this season, so very young. Based on his brief time in the big leagues, in my opinion, he's basically a 280 hitter, 15 home runs, 10 stolen base guy. Very similar. I agree with Steamer projections. But look, big thing with him is you got to love his plate discipline. 153 big league games, 86.4% contact rate. That's 10% more than the league average from last season. So, unfortunately, last season he only played 83 games, had a quad strain, broken hamate bone in his right hand. Unfortunately, that limited the number of games he played last season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, I want to start with Xander Bogaerts, who I actually rank quite a bit lower than his ADP, in part just because he's not super exciting. The first thing I want to say about him is, you remember in 2019 when he hit 33 home runs? Well, there's a lot of guys who have these crazy career highs in 2019 because that was the rabbit ball year.
Yes.
And when you see that, and it's something I always have to remind myself, when you're looking at a player's stat page, be it Pitcher List, Fangraphs, wherever, when the power spike is 2019, you need to take it with like 6 or 7 grains of salt, right? You need to take at least 10% off the top of that, maybe 20, because we just don't see it. I mean, another guy like that is DJ LeMahieu, who we won't talk about at shortstop, but I mean, he had that big power spike in 2019, and guess what? Didn't come back, because 2019 really it allowed certain types of hits to just leave the ballpark, right? Stuff that you just didn't think would go went. So, I implore people to sort of ignore the career highs. If you look at the rest of his career, 20 home runs is about right. I think he might fall a little short of that, but 15 to 20, that sounds about right for Xander Bogaerts. I mean, sure, that's fine. You know, Steamer's got that 19. That's fine. I'm surprised that Steamer projects a 266 batting average. Yeah, he hasn't batted below, you know, he hasn't batted that low since 2014. Yeah, this guy started his career in his first full season in the majors was in 2014. Xander Bogaerts has been around forever, but he only just recently turned 30. Right. We have a huge amount of data on Xander Bogaerts. It's, you know, and it kind of all tells the same story. This is a good player, probably not a great one. He doesn't need to be drafted super high, but you're going to get a lot of production here. The only thing that worries me, and this is not like a database thing, is, man, everyone that went to San Diego in the middle of last year did not do it. Right. I mean, they all got worse. And some of that is natural regression. Right to the mean, some guys were overperforming and they stopped overperforming. But even Juan Soto, I mean, he was just not good.
Right.
And I don't think it's because of Petco specifically, but I wonder what the heck happened. Is it like, do they have bad advice from hitting coaches? Are they, you know, is it just bad luck and it'll go away? I mean, I'm inclined to think that, right? Like Xander, like it's not easy for Xander Bogaerts to be a bad hitter, right? He's got a great hit tool, but of course, you know, something to think of. And then with Wander Franco, this is my concern, is that Wander Franco might look a lot like Xander Bogaerts from last year. This guy maybe has 20 to 25 home run power in him, but that needs to develop. He's right. Just got maybe the best hit tool in the majors, along with like Stephen Kwan, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys can put their bat on anything, right? So that's what makes Wander Franco so, you know, sort of exciting, but it's not the stat line. Right. He needs to he really needs to be volume driven. Now, I rank him at 10th because of just the massive upside. If this guy plays 150 games, I mean, he's a batting title contender, Wander Franco. That's the kind of talent we're talking about here. But, you know, again, durability, a little bit of an issue of late. And, you know, he may not overwhelm you. Like, this is not a 30 home run hitter. I just don't think that's very reasonable to see unless he makes a significant change in his batted ball profile. This is not a guy who's going to steal a bunch of bases, like maybe double digits, maybe, but barely, right? I mean, this is like a 10 to 15 stolen base guy at best, depending on if the Rays want to let him run like that. But he should be able to pile up runs, pile up RBI, and get you a ton of batting average and some decent home runs. And that makes him like a 4.5 tool guy, right? So that's something to keep in mind with Wander Franco, that he may not wow you. Like, he's sort of this like absolute opposite of O'Neill Cruz. O'Neill Cruz could be like a 30-30 guy if he puts it together, right? Even if the batting average is just never going to be above 250, 260, and even that might be a stretch. He'll strike out a lot. Wander Franco, especially in points leagues, comes up because he's going to make a ton of contact. That's just the way Wander Franco is. There was a reason he was a super freak prospect, and it's because the guy can put his bat literally on anything. His pitch recognition is fantastic. That's just what he's able to do. So he's a weird guy to kind of take, and you're really just going to have to feel your draft room out, know where you're at shortstop, because it's a risk in that you just don't know what that's going to look like. But projections will generally like him because they're going to project a lot of at-bats, and they're going to project a really high batting average in those at-bats for a team that scores a lot of runs. So you put that stuff together, you get a guy who's probably pretty good. So, you know, that's kind of a thing to think about with him. And really, again, this whole tier, like if you wanted to swap Dansby Swanson in my rankings with Xander Bogaerts, fine. I rank them like 7 places apart, but I can't begrudge you for that because this is a really, really tight tier, right? We talked about Tommy Edman earlier, but I have him in the middle of this tier. Right. By ADP, he'd be sort of in the tier that was above this. And fine. If you value stolen bases like that, fine. Yeah, I hate to say it, like right in the middle of this pack, if you're in leagues that have 5 position, you know, 5 start eligibility like Yahoo, you've also got Andrés Giménez in this mix, who we talked about when we talked about second base, who I like a lot because he's a 2020 guy who I think can hit for a high average. This is just a really packed tight tier. And then you've got a guy like Tim Anderson, who, man, if Tim Anderson plays, you're looking at 20 to 25 home runs, 20 to 25 stolen bases, a great batting average, doesn't walk much, but he bats at the top of a White Sox lineup. If they're just healthy for once, which feels like it's never going to happen, can score a whole bunch of runs with Eloy and Lewis Robert and Tim Anderson at the top of there. So he's an interesting guy. He's just a bit of a risk. I would never want Tim Anderson to be the first shortstop I took because that means I need another one and we're probably running out.
More of a middle infielder kind of guy that, you know, if your shortstop goes down, you could slip him in to the spot.
Yeah, or maybe you have like Bobby Witt, who you currently have at third base, but maybe he could fill in shortstop if if you know, if Tim Anderson goes down, or you know, you draft, you know, you felt like you got a steal. You normally, if I'm doing this, is because I took a shortstop early in the draft, and now I'm like, all right, I'll take another one, because when Tim Anderson's active, he absolutely deserves to be in a utility spot at least. If you don't have middle infield, he's absolutely in your middle infield spot. So, but I don't want to be relying on him to be my starting shortstop, because he just hasn't stayed healthy for the last several years.
Yeah. Next guy, let's talk about the next three, and then there are a couple that are in this tier and didn't appear in the top 15 according to NFBC that you know I'd like you to talk about. So Willy Adames was the 13th shortstop being taken in NFBC leagues. Through August 19th, he had a 219, 284, 443 triple slash and a line drive rate of 16.5. After that point, went on to hit 279 with a 330 OBP and a 492 slug, raised the line drive rate to 27.3. Fly ball rate dropped about 10%, but of course line drives tend to fall in for hits more often than fly balls. So a tale of two parts of a season for him. Hit a lot of home runs. I think he hit 31 home runs, 98 RBI, and chimed in with 8 stolen bases. So the 14th is a guy that 14th shortstop is a guy that you mentioned earlier, Jeremy Pena, Carlos Correa's heir. You know, we talked about him in a few episodes ago when second year players slumped in July and August, but then rebounded nicely when it counted in September. Came up big also in the playoffs. 41% O swing rate, which is a little concerning, but league average of 32.6. And then we got to talk about, you can't talk shortstop without talking about the mess that's going on with Carlos Correa. Can't even say what team he's with. But just a quick, you know, summary: appeared to have come to long-term agreements with the Giants. They balked because they saw something in his physical that they didn't like. Basically, he had arthroscopic surgery to repair a fractured right fibula and some ligament damage back in June of 2014. He was 19 at the time. So the Giants balked on the contract that they had agreed to but hadn't signed yet. So then all of a sudden the Mets come in riding on their white horse and they sign Correa to a long-term deal. But they looked at his medical history, and they didn't like what they saw either. Same right leg issue. But by the way, Correa has never gone on the IL with a right leg issue in his 8 big league seasons. So keep that in mind. But the Mets and Correa's reps are trying to rework a deal. Now the Twins might be back in trying to sign Correa. So it's a huge mess. But, you know, look, he's going to play a full season unless he gets hurt for someone in 2023. And you know what you're going to get, you know, mid 20 home run range, good batting average. Last season, 22 home runs, 291 batting average. Never became the double digit steal machine that we had hoped, because first couple seasons he had 14 and 13 stolen bases. Has missed a lot of games throughout his career. Played 136 last season, but when you take into consideration the 6 full seasons, you know, you take out 2020 because it was an abbreviated season, and then in his rookie year, he only came up in June. But when you take into consideration his 6 full seasons, he's only played as many as 136 games in a season 3 times. So, you know,
yeah, crazy situation. Let's start with the guy who I actually rank at the top of this big giant mess of a tier. I ranked him above Dansby Swanson. I ranked him above Xander Bogaerts, above O'Neill Cruz, above Tommy Edman, and that's Willy Adames, right? So here's a couple things about Willy Adames. First of all, big power, right? I very much believe in that high 20s to low 30s home run power. He showed that when he first arrived in Milwaukee, and he just kept showing it. The batting average wasn't pretty, and I don't have some stat to make that look better. I'll be honest with you. I don't have in my bag of tricks a rolling chart that makes you think that batting average is going to be a whole lot higher than 240, maybe 250. But
you don't like the
I'm
fact
fine
that he,
with that.
His line drive rate, he raised it at the end of the season. I don't know if he could sustain that.
Yeah,
that's going to help a little bit.
Line drive rates can be just a little fluky at times because, you know, the difference between a line drive, ground ball, and fly ball is a very, very small amount of wood on the bat. Mm-hmm. Right. So that just kind of happens. The fact of the matter to me is just that the power is very real. Expected stats show that power is real. That's what I'm after. I'm after that, you know, maybe not quite 10 stolen bases, but actual stolen, you know, he does steal bases. It's not an eight is not an insignificant number. There's a lot of fantasy titles that could have changed hands with 8 stolen bases.
Right.
Right. So that matters. And again, he's been fairly durable. He's played pretty much the whole season since 2019. He's gone through, these 31 home runs. I'm very much a believer, right? I think he can get back to 30. I think that he can get back to, you know, a whole mess of runs and RBI, almost double digit stolen bases. He just hurt you in batting average. And when you're doing rankings for things like a head-to-head categories league, the number one thing that I push down in value bit is often batting average, because batting average is fluky from week to week. It's not as fluky from season to season, but from week to week, it absolutely gets fluky, right? So, you know, I'm a big fan of Willy Adames. I think that he's a great pick there and he's a great value. And just because I rank him above those guys doesn't mean I think that he will always, like, he should always be drafted ahead of them. What it's really saying is, like, I would draft him ahead of them. And because most people don't, you might be able to wait just a little, but not that much. We're talking about NFBC ADP. I'm looking at the ADP just over the last couple of weeks, and the gap between O'Neal Cruz, who's number 8, and Willy Adames, who's number 13, is about 24 picks. Mm-hmm. That's less than 2 rounds, right? In NFBC, because those are 15 team leagues. That's only 2 rounds in a Yahoo league, right? So these guys are all going really close together. Right. O'Neal Cruz, Dansby Swanson, Xander Bogaerts, Wander Franco, Tim Anderson, and Willy Adames, and to a slightly lesser extent, Peña and Correa, who I'll get to in a second. They're all going really, really close together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a reason, again, that this tier in my ranks is so big, because you can shuffle them around based on your needs. If you don't need power because you loaded up on it early, then you probably don't need Willy Adames, because that's his main calling card, is the power and probably the ribbies. So that's something to just think about. Let's talk about Carlos Correa a bit, just because I know that I think his value is being pushed down in drafts a bit because of that durability. But let's be clear. The issue with Carlos Correa is not his potential availability for the 2023 season. The problem these teams have with Carlos Correa is his long-term health due to that, you know, whatever it is they put in his leg.
Right. He's got a plate.
Yeah, they are worried about that long term. They're not worried about that for 2023. And you shouldn't be worried about it for 2023. The only health concern you should have for Carlos Correa 2023 is the same health concern you have for Carlos Correa going into 2022, right? It's just that he does get hurt a lot. But yes, these contract negotiations, all that stuff, that doesn't impact his availability for the 2023 season, right? Mm-hmm. If I want to call back, I know a couple people have talked about this, but this should feel very similar to JD Martinez when he signed with the Red Sox. He was a Boris client. He had durability issues. Teams balked a bit at his physicals, and it took all the way till the end of really spring training before he signed that 8-year deal, right? And the big issue was just some stuff they found in his physicals, and they were worried about, you know, they had to negotiate these weird injury provisions to pay him less if he got hurt, right? These are weird things to negotiate with. If you've ever seen managers talk, or not managers, but owners and general managers talking about dealing with Boris, it's an incredibly frustrating process, because, you know, he demands big money because he gets that money for his clients, right?
He's, Carlos Correa is going to be
he's going to be signed before the season starts. He's going to, if he's healthy, play most of the season.
Yes.
That's just how it's going to go. So don't worry too much about all this negotiating. It should not change your opinion of him on the draft, especially because with his profile, it's not like he's this guy who hits a lot of like fly ball scrapers, right? Mm-hmm. He hits the ball hard to the gaps. That's what he does. He'll hit for a high batting average in any park. He'll hit home runs in any park, right? Yeah, he'll hit a couple more in like Cincinnati, but they're not really in play here, right? He hit a few less in Detroit. He's probably not going to Detroit, right? But I mean, there's just a lot to like about Carlos Correa. Again, he's just a durability concern. He doesn't really steal bases. That's all that you're really worried about. And he probably won't hit 30 home runs because he's going to hit for more batting average than that. A lot of those are going to be doubles because he's not trying to hit fly balls to the pull field. He's trying to hit these like smoked, you know, high line drives, which is awesome, right? I love that about Carlos Correa. So, that's also something to keep in mind. And actually, Jeremy Peña, who I felt really high on, and he just keeps moving up in drafts, and it makes me more and more nervous, because I do love that in the second half, we saw Jeremy Peña make the adjustments he needed to make. I talked about it in an old podcast. I'll talk about it here. What you saw was a very, very typical thing for players. There's a lull. he came out hot. Then there's a lull, and it didn't last as long as you think it did. Right. It felt like it lasted the whole middle of the season, but it was like a month and a half, maybe 2 months, probably less, that he wasn't that good. He wasn't. I mean, he was bad. He got cut July in a lot August. Of leagues, maybe all of them. Right. That 18. Just happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially in redraft, but he came back at the end of the season because he is a good hitter. And I think that he can, you know, he finished in the top 15 of the position last year. I think he very much can do that again, right? Even a position that's very, very packed full, like shortstop is this year. I think he can do that because he is a very solid, dependable player. Just know that his upside is certainly not the same as like a Carlos Correa or an O'Neill Cruz or a Wander Franco, right? His upside is going to be between like 10 and 15 at shortstop due to how deep that position is. Mm-hmm. There's just not a lot of realities where Jeremy Peña can give you Francisco Lindor numbers or Corey Seager numbers. He can't do that. He's just not that kind of player, but he is a really good shortstop. I think he should hit closer to the top of that lineup this year instead of being at the bottom of it for the Astros, a team that's going to score a lot of runs. So there's a lot of really good things to like there. And, you know, I think that you should be excited about Jeremy Peña and hope that he sort of falls a little later than some of these other names like a Carlos Correa. And I think that may happen as we get closer to the season, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that Jeremy Peña should probably fall a little bit later, those guys, and I think he will. But he also represents sort of close to the end of the shortstops that I would be okay with starting in a 12-team league. Mm-hmm. Because once you start getting lower than Jeremy Peña in this tier, I also have Gleyber Torres below him. He's not eligible there in the NFBC. He is in Yahoo leagues. In that, like, you're starting to really get to the bottom there. And I really hope you've addressed all your other positions before this. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, there are drafts. I mean, in our first mock draft for pitcher list that we did back in the fall, I did take Jeremy Peña as my starting shortstop, I believe, or maybe my second shortstop, willing to start him much, much later than the rest. Right. Because I think that he can give you really good value and he's well above replacement level, because that's going to be the weird thing. As deep as shortstop is, the replacement level stinks. Right. Mm-hmm. Because the replacement level is, you know, like a Javi Baez. He just will not be as good as these other guys. He won't be close. Yeah. So it's an ugly, ugly replacement level. So Jeremy Peña is this nice piece that's, you know, I think a good tier above that, but it is we're getting to the bottom of the barrel here. You do not want to have no shortstop and see Jeremy Peña coming off the board.
Yeah. There's a situation where you might say, well, you know, the shortstop position is so deep. It's so deep. Then all of a sudden you turn around and you waited so long that all of a sudden, like you said, Javier Baez will be your starting shortstop. And he was a guy I wanted to talk to you about as we close out the episode. And there's another guy that made this tier, Gunnar Henderson, for the Orioles. And just wanted to get your take on those two players. First of all, Javi Baez, kind of a weird season, right? Finally gets that strikeout rate down, and then his season collapses, right? He had a 33.6% K rate the season before, then 2022 dropped it down to 24.9, and batted .238, 17 home runs, 9 stolen bases. And Gunnar Henderson, Roster Resource has him batting third. Of course, you know, it's not official. It's just their projection, but hasn't batted third for the Orioles and playing short as an ADP of 91. NFBC, by the way, has him third base eligible only, but I just want to get your take on those two players before we go.
Yeah, let's start with Gunnar Henderson, obviously. So he's in that tier with sort of, you know, that big giant tier that we have. I rank him, at right below Carlos Correa, ADP for NFBC. When we talk about third base, we'll talk about more about Gunnar Henderson. But, you know, his ADP is just inside the top 100. I think there's a lot to like about him. He showed us some really good things when he came on with the Orioles late last season. I think there's a lot of upside there. But his value, Gunnar Henderson isn't going to be your shortstop. He's going to be your third baseman. That position... There are 8 guys taken in the top 100 at third base, just as a teaser. The next guy, his ADP is 147. There's a huge, huge gap of third baseman. I mean, there's like 8 or 9 of them that you want. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it starts getting real ugly in that you need some good things to happen. It's not safe at all. So mm-hmm. something to keep in mind when you're looking at that. as far as Javier Baez, you know, people always wanted him to make better swing decisions, blah, blah, blah. But it's because they missed the point about Javier Baez. Javier Baez did what he did. Like when he was a Met, I don't know how much you watched him as a Met, but I'll tell you what he did. And he also did this as a Cub, was he swung that hard because he knew if he hit it, he was going to launch it. Right. Mm-hmm. That's how you hit 30 home runs when you're Javi Baez. You don't do it by patiently waiting and making contact. You do it by putting all, you know, he had great, his hand-eye coordination is not the same as it was. He'll be 30. You know, he is 30 now. He just turned 30 last month, you know, or maybe at the end of November, I forget. December 1st, he turned 30. Here's the thing with Javi Baez. He needs to be swinging hard. You see this actually in the hard hit rate. It's one of the big telling things, the difference between last season and this season. His average EV comes down by like 2 percentage points, but that's not the number. Look at the hard hit rate, drops by 7 percentage points. The barrel rate drops by another 5.4 percentage points. I mean, that's just not what we want, right? And it's because he's not swinging with that authority. He's being a safer hitter. And well, you know what you get with a safer hitter with Javi Baez is a season like this, 17 to 20 home runs, 70 runs scored, 70 RBI. That's a volume guy. That's nothing. That's not, you know, is there upside? Sure, but not if he looks like that, right? I rank him 24th at shortstop, and it's because of that. Because when he's not doing that stuff, he's not exciting for fantasy. You actually almost want to see him swinging that bat hard, because if he's not, he's not going to make that big contact, especially in a big park like Comerica. So I'm not that high on Javi Baez. A couple other guys we didn't mention, I'll just mention them real quick. Ahmed Rosario, I have in the same tier as Jeremy Pena. He's one of these good in fantasy and then sort of kind of ugly in real life, but he puts up some home runs. He puts up, you know, plenty of stolen bases. He hits for a decent batting average. He gets a ton of at-bats. So he's, you know, he's okay as a starting shortstop in a 12-teamer, but he's going to be the worst one. But he's a great middle infield. He's outfield eligible in Yahoo leagues. So that's a nice thing. You might believe in Jorge Polanco for a rebound. You know, I know he suffered a lot of injuries last season. Maybe Jorge Polanco turns it around, could be like a 20 to 25 home run guy, not the 30 you saw in 2019, because that, you know, actually last season, because that's just not what he is, but you should be able to get some decent power out of him. Nico Horner is a guy I'm looking at for the Cubs, sort of as that reserve shortstop, where you can do that, or maybe that, you know, maybe that late middle infielder. He can make a ton of contact. He can get double digit steals, double digit home runs, and he could hit for a high batting average near a top of the Cubs lineup, right? Him and Dansby Swanson are going to be up there. So I think there's some interesting things there. And then CJ Abrams. CJ Abrams is a guy to talk about. He's you know, he's eligible at second base and short in Yahoo leagues. It might differ based on his position eligibility, but with CJ Abrams, what you're getting is a ton of stolen bases and hopefully some batting average. It really started to see it after he got traded to the Nationals towards the end of the season. We saw it get a little bit better. You don't want to be relying on CJ Abrams, but you will see projection systems giving you a big, you know, a nice big high number for CJ Abrams because of those stolen bases. That's going to drive his fantasy value. But if you're in leagues that require stolen bases, especially these 12 teamers, CJ Abrams should be available very, very late. And I want to specifically not talk about Adalberto Mondesi. There's nothing new. There's no new information. He's exactly what you thought he was. He continues to be that. If you want to take that gamble, go ahead. I ranked him because he has upside, but I don't think that he's someone that you should be planning to draft. He is a fun last round pick if you want.
Right. Right. And yeah, glad you mentioned CJ Abrams. He's a guy I'm going to be watching a lot this preseason. Someone that you could get that, like you said, I mean, you might not draft him as a starter, but, you know, he has the potential that if he gets hot, you know that the Nationals are going to play him every day. So, you know, at least he has that going for him. Yeah, Mondesi, you know, you wonder if he is healthy to start the season, which he should be. But do they move Bobby Witt to third and maybe put Mondesi playing every day?
I'm not sure they see him as a full-time player.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that also matters. I did want to call out Tyro Estrada. I like Tyro Estrada. What's interesting is I rank him like 23rd among shortstops, but that's because he's in the top 15 at second base. These two positions, second base and shortstop, are like the opposites. Second base is this sort of like smooth transition down, and there's guys that are interesting late that could be starters, like a Luis Arraez, Jeff McNeil, CJ Abrams. Now that's a guy who might be your middle infield. He could be your middle infielder and maybe sneak into your starting second baseman. But at shortstop, they're like bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. Yeah, great point.
Because of just what that top end talent looks like at shortstop versus second base.
Yep. All right, some great analysis from Scott Chu. And that'll slam the lid on things for today. You could follow my buddy Scott Chu at If the Chu Fits, and I'm sure he's working feverishly fine-tuning his player rankings. When do you start working on the hitter list? Or is that always a work in progress? Even
I never feel 100% about it, right? Uh-huh. I mean, it's really hard with hitters because we've got, I know pitchers all have five categories, but they all kind of give you the same ones, mm-hmm. right? Where with hitters, you just have guys that don't steal, right? You have guys that don't, that only get runs and not RBI. So, sometimes it's team need, but a hitter list should come out sometime in, I should have a first one maybe in February. Mm-hmm. Not sure exactly when, but before then, what you will get is my top 30 at all of the infield positions and my top 100 outfielders. That's my all main right. project that I'm working on right now. I know that the next time we chat, it's going to be about third base. Man, I talked about a cliff at shortstop. There's a cliff at third base. Third base is the position you need to be the most ready for going into drafts, because at shortstop, mm-hmm. someone is going to land to you because there's a bunch of good ones. Third right. base, you got to go get one.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we look forward to seeing you next time in a couple weeks. You could follow me at Joe Galina. Our first episode of the 2023 season. Reach out to us. Let us know what you think of the podcast. If there's anything that you think that we need to cover that we didn't, you could subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcast content from, and leave us a review whenever you can. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities, and we'll see you next time.